This is Dig and Swing, a volleyball podcast for everyday coaches. Okay, we're going to switch things up on you this week. I have my rotating disposable co-host, Pat Medea, on today, this week. Yay!
Hello, everybody.
We're back. It's been a long time since I've seen you and talked to you.
It has been.
Too long. It's too long. So, yes, we are going to actually reverse the roles today because Pat wants to interview me, which is slightly terrifying to me. So we'll see how this goes. Well, we're going to test out his interviewing skills. So if I ever get sick, we got you.
Oh, don't put that on me. So, Sarah, you've worked a lot with the younger age groups throughout your coaching career.
Yep.
And that is, for as important as that age group and that skill level is, I feel like it's also the most underserved in terms of what's out there for coaches. There's a whole bunch of stuff about rotational analysis and terminal players and blah, 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 blah. And you don't get to that unless we build players when they're 6, 7, 8, 9 years old. Yep. Or, you know, the U12, hey, it's my first time playing camp. And you seem to have gravitated into that space more than most of your career. So I feel like that's a conversation worth having. So I don't know if that's what you want to talk about, but I feel like that's something that a Dig It With Sarah seems to be based around your company, but also I feel like that's just what, where you gravitated to as a coach in general.
Yeah. I thought that coaching high school age kids, and I actually thought about coaching in college because I love more complex thoughts, more complex running plays, you know, thinking about rotations and, you know, where's the best place to, what rotation do you start in, all that. I loved those concepts and I felt like I couldn't do that with the younger kids. And I have found that you could actually do some of that stuff with the younger kids. You may have to introduce it later on in the season, but you can do it. I have coached a lot of high school age kids. That's how I started. And I have found that it's been more of a personality difference that has kind of pushed me away from that age group. And coaching the younger kids has just brought so much joy in my life.
Can I cut you off right there?
Yeah.
Is it your personality or the high schoolers' personalities that was the disconnect? Or is it a mixture of both?
That's a good question. Good job, Pat. See, you already got a gold star. Gold star. I don't even know. I instinctually, as like protecting who I am, like want to say it's the kids, but I also like to take ownership of myself. I find that the high school age kids, you know, everybody complains about them. Everybody says that, oh, these kids are so entitled. And you know, now that I even think about it, like maybe it's more the parents than the kids, but the parents of kids at that age group that kind of conflict with my philosophy and my preference. My personality is, when I coach, is to be energetic and excited and happy and facilitating a really positive environment. And I have found that a lot of the high school age kids want someone to yell at them, someone to scream at them, someone to externally hold themselves accountable instead of being held accountable to themselves. It wasn't a good fit. And it just became increasingly harder as I have gotten more experience as a coach and have learned a lot from my peers that's not who I am. I used to be that person and I really enjoyed it. And so maybe that's why back in the day it was fine, because it was kind of like this symbiotic, like I got anger out. I was super frustrated with kids and they enjoyed it because that's how they like to be coached. But I found that I have found the sport more and more enjoyable each year. And that's probably why I have gravitated towards the younger kids, because the personality just doesn't, it's just not me to be a screamer. And unfortunately, a lot of high school kids are, that's what they think they need. Not all of them. I have a really great group of kids that, you know, that don't and understand. And I think that starts with when they're young kids, like they grow up starting at a really young age, thinking that that's the appropriate way to be coached, that that's the only way that they're going to get better. And that because I don't yell, I'm not a good coach. And that's why I started doing more younger kids, because I thought, I don't want kids to grow up like that. That's just sad. Like, that's just a sad existence to be yelled at for 4 years of your high school playing. That's just unfortunate. And I had that. I had a coach like that. I got screamed. I got called every name under the sun, every expletive that I didn't even know what half the words meant. And I thought about how miserable I was and how much like serious PTSD I have from that guy, that I started to realize, I was like, that's not who I am. So I have started to gravitate more towards the younger kids. And I think this is my going to be at my third year of no high school teams. I still coach high school kids in lessons and camps and stuff, but no teams, no ownership of, you know, their specific team for high school kids. And it's been amazing. I can't believe it took me this long to find some more, like a little bit more joy in coaching. And I love my babies. They're all my babies. Even when they grow up, they're all my babies. And yeah, I think that's what it is. I think my growth as a coach kind of pushed me towards coaching younger kids.
And I know, not, and to piggyback off that, I know for me, I jumped in coaching at the high school level first because that's what was available to me. On the boys' side, I coached at the school that I had gone to. And about 2 years after that, I started coaching younger girls. And then for about 4 or 5 years, I would have the boys' high school season and then the girls' club season and the summer camps for the girls. And I realized I enjoyed coaching the girls more, just because it seemed like a smarter brand of volleyball, where the boys mm-hmm. are just big, stupid cavemen who hit the ball really hard. Which
you said it, not me.
I'm right. But at the same time, like, there is things I miss. But I mean, just between the genders, I enjoy coaching the women's side because it's more of an evolved sport in that they need to learn rather than mm-hmm. just like coaching a boy. It's like, oh, just jump harder and hit higher, or jump higher and hit harder. They probably say it that way too. So my personality and what I enjoy teaching gravitated me towards the girls, and I've coached every age of club. And I don't know where I fit. I kind of like 15 is kind of my sweet spot, I think, because they're old enough that you can talk to them, you know, like an adult, like they understand the world, as opposed to like, you know, the 8-year-old who's, you know, still figuring out how to tie her shoes half the time.
Yes.
But I've coached, you know, I've ran the 11s program at a club before. So, I mean, I get that side of it too. So, it's definitely a different muscle coaching the high school kids as opposed to, you know, coaching my 17-2s, even to my 15s that I lead. I mean, it's two very different muscles.
Because 17s
is all about, 17-2s is all about execution. We're trying to win a national championship. Thanks, coronavirus. But other than that, you know, it's about executing. They already know how to do it. Now we're just getting better at it, as opposed to the 15s where they're still figuring out what all the things are. Even though we play at a high level, it's still raw. So it's kind of exciting to do that. But getting back, so playing off the personality conversation, how you got to the younger kids, what is the sort of personality that works with the younger age groups? What are the characteristics of the coach in that age group that you see kind of take hold with kids?
You have to have so much patience and so much energy, I feel. I am bouncing around, energetic, because I think that if the kids see the coaches super excited and physical, that they kind of, it kind of injects a little bit of energy in them. At that age group, they're so awkward and they don't really know how to, they're still working on how to socialize and how to be around other people, and they don't want to look like the weirdo. And when I start, you know, jumping and clapping and getting excited because they, you know, finally got their footwork right, even if they missed, completely airballed the ball, it just becomes infectious on the rest of the kids too that are there. And then they get excited and they start cheering for the other kids too. I think you have to have a lot of energy and a lot of, you have to be able to deal with a lot of failures and convert those into little tiny steps to getting better. And it kind of reminds me from a previous episode with Trevor that he said that struggle is the price of admission for learning. I still have it written on a little receipt on my desk because it was so beautiful. I think you have to be patient with a lot of struggle and seeing kids struggle. You have to be able to take a kid that is super, you know, upset because they're not getting their serve over the net and try to find ways to inject joy in that kid. I'm taking joy from Lauren Anderson because he was talking about that before. I love the concept of joy. And you have to find a way to like turn that back into something positive for them. And that's really hard to do all of the time and still acknowledge that they're upset that they missed a serve or something. And I find myself fortunate that I can actually, I've learned the skill to how to do that. I think that if you're quick to anger and quick to show frustration and your face shows your emotions in the wrong way, that you're probably not going to be very successful with younger groups.
Yeah. And I mean, for when I led the youth development stuff at Niagara Frontier Volleyball, the first thing I figured out was that they might be 8, 10, 12 years old. And we don't often call a 12-year-old actually smart, but emotionally speaking, they're very intelligent. They can tell when you don't care.
Yep.
They can tell when an assistant coach doesn't care. So when I would lead, and I was very fortunate, I had a bunch of high school kids that would, you know, I don't know how it is in other parts of the country, but in Buffalo, it's very common for seniors in high school and juniors and sophomores to need to do community service hours as a part of their high school's diploma. So we would have our club kids come in and donate time. And that was, you know, because when I was in high school, I had to go to a soup kitchen or help run, you know, food drives. And I was lifting crates all day. And I'm happy I was able to positively help my community. But if I was given the choice of hauling around cans of food or bouncing around a volleyball gym, I'm picking volleyball gym 12 times out of 10.
Heck yes.
So I was very fortunate when I was leading back in Buffalo that I was able to have a bunch of energetic high school kids. But, you know, hey, my boyfriend broke up with me or I got a big test or whatever. And like having the conversations with the assistants is like, I empathize with your problems, but I need you on for an hour. And then figure your life out around it. But this is part of being an adult and being a professional. And this is a job. You're like, we are expecting you to carry out a job. I need you to care for the next hour.
Absolutely.
And when the staff as a whole gave a poop, the kids gave a poop. And it was really, you know, I had to check myself, and that's, you know, it's hard to shine the mirror on yourself sometimes, mm-hmm. but then also, you know, maintaining my assistance and making sure the staff was good. But when we had good sessions, I mean, the kids got immeasurably better. It felt like in 5 minutes, and it was super duper fun. And it was one of those things, you look at the clock and you're like, holy crap, and a whole hour went by already. So, yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And patience, and just, if there's one thing I can tell youth coaches, it's like, these kids aren't playing in the Olympics.
Yep.
They're not, like, what's the goal of your youth program? It's for them to come back.
Like, 100%. Yes, yes, yes.
And I forget who I was talking to somebody about coaching in general. And when you get new kids in the door who've never played volleyball, they came to your program because they wanted to try a sport. It's when they come back is because they liked you.
Right.
Because unless you're Jim Dooley, our friend Jim Dooley up in Anchorage, Alaska, mm-hmm. Where he's probably the only show in town. It's Alaska. I can't imagine there's multiple volleyball programs in a commutable distance. But I mean, if you're in any city, there's dozens of clubs around you.
Right.
So if they come to Northern Lights where I coach, they wanted to try volleyball. They came here just because they didn't know volleyball. It's when they come back for the next session, it's because they believe in you as the coach, or you as in the build, you know, you as the organization. So take that serious, like just take that seriously and understand they want to get better, but these kids aren't going to be in the Olympics tomorrow, the next day, or the next day. They're 12.
Yeah, exactly.
No 12-year-old's ever made the Olympic team, and it's not going to happen anytime soon. So, like, understanding the long game goes a long way.
There's a few things I can piggyback on that for. So I have the Dig It With Sarah group, and I run that independently from the club that I coach for. For my thing, you know, because out here, I'm sure everywhere else, it's very clicky on the clubs that you play for. It's where you go. And, you know, and I didn't want to be, even though I coach for one club, I didn't want just those kids to come in. And so I try to catch the kids that even haven't even started playing club before. And I think this past club season, so we have, you know, every region's different. We have about 16 teams. We field 16 teams. So we usually do, we have like 2 12s, 3 14s, you know, going all the way up to 18s. And I was so like, this year was the first year where I was like, holy crap. I have a real impact. I had 8 kids show up for our club tryouts. And these kids have never played club before, ever. All they did was they did my camps, my clinics, they did lessons, they did whatever. And I told them about club, and they came to either my club's tryouts or another club's tryouts. And like, actually, I think it was more than 8 at some point. I think 8 of them came to my club, but altogether, I think I had about 12 or 13 kids that have never even played club before. And that was the, like, when I was counting up the kids, and we actually had to cut kids this year because we had too many, like we don't have the ability to take all of them. And unfortunately, it breaks my heart. But I go, man, if those kids that I brought didn't come in, we wouldn't have to cut kids. And I mean, I had a couple of my kids get cut, but then they found another club that they could play for, which is awesome. And my measure of success has been the retention, and whether either the retention or have they increased the level that they play at the following year. So are they on a twos team and then they make their ones team? You know, are they on the lowest level region team and they move up a little bit? But my number one thing is the retention part. And I think that is something I pride myself. I will fight anybody on that because I think I have one of the best retentions in my club. Aside from kids that are part of the national program, because they're all part of, you know, they're going to be part of the national team all the way through, but our region level kids and the number that come back the year after I coach them. And even after that, I probably have one of the best ones, and I am damn proud of that. And bringing kids in on my own that have no affiliation with other clubs. Like that is probably one of the most things I am so proud about, and I will toot my own horn all day on. And it tells me that I'm doing something right. So even when I feel like I'm not and told that I'm not doing something right, I think I am, because that's how I measure my success.
Awesome. So what would be the ideal practice for the littles? What makes time go by quick, and what have you done where things kind of cratered and it got miserable?
I helped run my club's youth academy a couple of years ago. The director that ran it was moving. I had worked with her for a couple sessions at that point, and so I took the lead on it. And I was super excited because I had worked with a lot of these kids already for several, like almost a year or 2 years at that point, for a couple sessions. And I took what she had and tried to modify it a little bit. I found that the kids like, it's really helpful when you have short drills. You don't put kids in drills for longer than, I mean, my limit, even with my 14s, is like 15 minutes. Because you lose their attention span. You can progress on it and, you know, build on it and maybe add something else to it. But, you know, passing with a partner at that age group, I mean, I could barely stomach 5 to 10 minutes of it because they're just so bored and they check out. I always say that those kids have, you know, the attention span of goldfish. They don't know what they're doing anymore. They forget what the cue is. So I do a lot of frequent short pauses. So, you know, when we do our passing stuff, we'll do, you know, like we'll go over like platform passing and what are those things you're looking for. And so we break it down like, okay, I want everybody to pass and then freeze, and we do it on the whistle. And so we do that. And then we do that for a couple times. And that way all they're focusing on is one thing. And then they're like, okay, what's the next thing? So they get kind of energetic about waiting for the next task, but it's very short bursts. Playing is a lot harder with that age group because it ends up getting crazy chaotic, which I love chaos. I love playing. That's kind of my thing that I promote. But I also am reasonable that I know that, you know, more of the block training and going over the technique stuff is really important. But at the same time, you don't want to be just bored to tears. So I find little ways to modify the gameplay part of it. It's really helpful to have, like you were saying, about having like assistance or having someone help out at your stuff. I had some of our, you know, freshmen through seniors helping out at the youth academies or helping out even at my camps. And they help initiate, you know, if a ball's dead, they just throw in the next ball right away. So keeping the pace fast is going to make that time go by so much faster. Especially, you know, one of the things that I like to do is if I have, you know, if a kid's learning how to overhand serve and they can't get it over the net, which, you know, at that age group, they're not going to, you know, first of all, I have them go all the, I go, you know, step as close into the court as you need to be successful. So to get it over the net. And then if it goes in the net, I have one of my big kids throwing a ball right away. So we're not waiting for, you know, oh, okay, now the ball has to go over to the other side and they have to go serve. Like, it just keeps things going. I have been through some youth, you know, youth clinics and camps where I swear 1 minute feels like a decade. And it's when you're doing these slower paced drills that are, the kids don't want to be in there. And me as energetic as I am, I don't even have the energy to put up with it. It's so hard to find that energy. So I think having assistance to like chip in balls really quickly, do short bursts of things and try to keep lines shorter. And one of the days that I ran my youth academy, and this is me learning as a coach, I hate lines. I hate kids waiting in line. It drives me crazy. But I was all by myself. I think I had one other helper, and I had like, I don't know, like 30 or 40 kids. And so it was a drill that it was hard for me to get. The level of play wasn't really there where I can have the kids like kind of initiate themselves. It was going to be too disruptive and slow. And I had David Rubio from the U of A, his daughter was at the youth academy and came up to me and goes, "You have long lines over here." And I go, "I know. Would you like to help me?" That's the sort of stuff that's going to make things go off the rails, is if you don't have enough people to help, if you don't have a good coach to player ratio with younger kids, especially with younger kids, it's going to be torture, absolute torture. And I mean, you don't have to have seniors in high school help. I mean, I had freshmen helping me, and these kids are, you know, maybe a year or two older than them, and they're just bowling in a ball. I mean, they know how to throw a ball at that point, hopefully. Maybe walk and chew gum at the same time. And they feel like they're cool. They're like, "Wow, I get to like show how to demo a drill with these kids. I feel so special."
And then you see the panic in their eyes when they know how to pass, but they have to pass in front of their, you know, in front of 40 people. And it's like, "Oh,
absolutely. Ooh, no."
So the things I've noticed, because I've done enough college camps, you know, around the East Coast, your plan has to be flexible. You have to have a plan, but B, you have to have a flexible plan, because, you know, if it's a camp setting, unless you've done camps in that region for a long time and you know the kids that you're going to get in, you don't know what you're getting. And you might have a plan where it's like, okay, we're going to do partner passing. And then you get, you know, three teams worth of ones players from three different clubs. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, like these kids are good. Like, we don't have to do partner passing.
Yeah.
These kids actually know what they're doing. But if you plan to have a bunch of ones players there and what you get is a bunch of kids off the street, those really cool drills that you wrote, they're not going to work. So, yep. I think being flexible and realistic with what you have, and then finding the middle ground of, you don't want to bore your best kid to tears, but you also don't want to drown your worst kid.
Yes.
So finding the middle ground of that And that comes, unfortunately, that comes with doing it wrong a bunch of times. But just being aware of it goes a long way.
Yep.
Hey, I'm not quite sure I'm doing this right. Sorry, little Jimmy.
Yep.
Sorry, little Susie. My bad. You know, I goofed up. I think that goes a long way of just kind of understanding the flow of your time, the flow of your kids. And I mean, and like you said too, like if I'm running a drill and I'm bored of it as a coach, I guarantee the kids are bored of it too.
Oh yes.
So I think having a little bit of your own internal monologue of just like, cause I'm 30, but I'm also still just a tall child. If I'm bored of something,
yes, you are.
If I'm bored of it, someone else on this court's bored of it too. So let's move on and get something productively done. So that's just kind of my two cents on that.
Well, one of the things I wanted to touch base on about having that big disparity in levels is it actually happened to me a couple years ago. I had been working with this girl for a couple years. I'll have a, give her a shout out to Zeta. She's like my adopted daughter. I've been working with her for a couple years and she played club for a year and was signed up for my camps because she followed, you know, she does all the stuff with me. And when the camp, when the kids showed up, I had no idea. Of course, you never know who's going to show up. And I ended up, the level was like a lot lower than what she thought it was going to be because the kid, just the kids that came out. And so what you do in that situation is you find, you take the drills that you were already going to do or the modified drills for the average mean of the kids that can play. And then you give that one person like a little extra, like something else to work on. So for her, we were doing some like hitting drill. And I said, you know, hey, I want you to work on like cutting the ball. So go, you know, thumb down, thumb up on the ball. I want you to work on that. So don't worry about what they're supposed to be doing for hitting. You're going to do hitting too, but I just want you to add that. And I found that that's what I've done even at like a lot of my lessons or clinics when I don't know what the level of play is. I just, sometimes I'll just keep the same drills, but give somebody a little extra or make it a little bit easier. So this past year before everything happened, I had a small group lesson like every Friday and I had two girls that were sisters and the one was like younger than 12. She was like 10 and the other one was like 13. And so they had a big disparity in like how they played. And so the younger one, I was like, okay, we're doing the same drill, but you get extra points if you do this. And it was a lot easier of a, you know, what they were supposed to do, what for her. And I find that's actually been like my little, my way to keep them engaged. Cause like I said, like my thing is all about retention. And if they can find a way to not feel like they suck or they're bored at my stuff, then it's going to increase the chances that they're going to come back again. So,
what is crucial to keep kids engaged, not only in practice and camp, but as a sport as a whole?
You have to find a way to not kill their love for the game. And I know on USA Volleyball has the coach's manifesto and it says on there, you know, never be a player's last coach. And I think about that all the time, every time I coach, every year I go, I do not want to be these kids' last coach. And I think that keeping them engaged and coming back is finding those little moments of the little things that they do enjoy about the game. I think that the relentlessly positive in, you know, with whatever age group they're in, there's going to be, you know, varying degrees of how you're going to communicate with the kids. But trying to find that little internal motivation they have and keep it the flame going. For me, volleyball has always been my outlet. When I was little, my mom was really, really sick and I played volleyball as 2 hours, you know, every practice. So 3 times a week, I got to think about myself and my teammates instead of my mom being in the hospital. It was my escape. And so I feel like I know what that feels like the things that kept me in there, even though I had a mean coach and even though everything was falling apart at home, like I still had that competitive nature and that drive to get better. And so trying to implement those two things, you know, play games, put a score on something, you know, kind of start not like talking crap, but, oh, hey, Sally over there just beat you. You're going to let her do that to you? No. Oh, you want a shot? Okay, let's do this. And that kind of keeps them engaged too. You know, they want to beat somebody. But like, and let them enjoy it. I see so many kids getting burnt out, getting tired of playing, tired of getting yelled at by, like, you know, sophomore, junior year. A lot of it is if they don't make their varsity team, they're done. And one of the things that I tell my kids and the parents is that volleyball is a lifelong sport. It really is. It is. What's the oldest level for open right now? Isn't it like
for open
for adult open?
But nationals, they've got, I think, a U-73.
Yeah.
Or 83, I mean, something like that.
Yeah. And that's why I tell them, like, it's like old people playing. I mean, do they have that in basketball? Do they have that in soccer? I mean, maybe they do, but I haven't seen it or heard of it. And I mean, these are competitive. Huh?
Yeah. And it probably looks bad in baseball.
Yeah.
But you guys can't throw that far.
Yeah,
but the volleyball. I mean, I remember their pictures from nationals a couple years ago, and I think it was the 83 and up division, or I can't remember exactly. It was old. I mean, like, these are not young folks playing, and there was. I mean, it looked like it was five people deep the whole area on the court. Just everyone, you know, all the, you know, the open players, the PVL guys, just everyone like wide eyed, like, oh, grandpa's playing against grandpa's. And I was like, oh, that's super rad that they, you know, that was happening.
It is. So that's what I tell my kids. I'm like, you play this, you know, I didn't play volleyball my junior and senior year. I transferred schools and I hated the coach and I didn't agree with, you know, crossing my fingers and to bump the ball, you know, interlocking them like, you know, like I'm praying or something. And so I was like, well, I'm not playing for this person. So I didn't play. But I still play college club. Like, I tell them there's always other opportunities and you could always coach and you could always play as an adult and you're going to play for, you know, you could play the sport for a really, really long time. And that when you, I think that I've had kids stay a little bit more engaged in it, even if they don't make their varsity team. I have found a couple of the kids that I have coached, like, even if they didn't make it, they still play their junior year or their sophomore year, or their senior year. They kind of get hooked into the sport and they're not there just to make, you know, a team or have a number or make a certain percentage. They're there because they truly enjoy the sport. And that to me is really telling, you know, if you're going to play because you really enjoy it and you're not going to, there's nothing that's going to come out of it. You're not going to win nationals. You're not going to, you know, get signed for the Olympic team. You're genuinely playing because you love it. That's my goal in life. Oh, I want everybody to play when they're 80.
And to piggyback on that, I think it's really important for them to have, for lack of a better term, heroes in the sport. And I've been ridiculously fortunate to coach in two areas that are so strong. Like the boys in Buffalo that grew up playing, Matt Anderson's from Buffalo. And he does and hats off to Maddie. He does a fantastic job of making time available. And you'll see him around at the, you know, at the Buffalo Niagara Court Center. I think now it's the Niagara Frontier Sports Complex, but whatever, in West Seneca. We see him all the time. He comes over, takes pictures with the kids. And of course, you know, all the girls, I mean, he's 6'10" and handsome as all get up. So all the girls swoon, all the girl coaches swoon. Me and the handful of guy coaches are like, what's that? Like, I played against him in high school. It's just like, that's Matt. But at the same time, I mean, he's an Olympian that walks in the door and it's like, oh man,
heck
Matt
yeah.
Anderson. And then, you know, out here in Minnesota, having the Tori Dixons of the world or Samantha Selger Swenson from Minnesota or the Tapp twins, or I'm forgetting 18 other Gophers that went on to the national team that played for us. I mean, they come back and hang out. I mean, Tori, I was doing a lesson and Tori Dixon walked through the door at 6 foot, whatever she is, 5. And I honestly got me and the girl who I had a girl that was hitting. We both looked at each other, looked at the end of the court as Tori floated through the building. And we just looked at each other like slack jawed, just like, oh my God, this, like, I'm getting starstruck. I'm 29 at the time. It's just like, holy, and she went to the weight room and just started lifting weights, and I was just like, oh my God, that's so cool.
Right.
But I mean, having, and I mean, yes, it was one of the older players, but I think having the people that you look up to, and you know, even if they go on, you know, YouTube or whatever and find a favorite player and we're gonna watch their highlight package and, oh, I'm gonna be like them. And just like, and you know, I think as coaches, we need to do a better job of getting the pro names out there and looking up players. They're like, hey, go watch a video on this player and watch how they do a thing and see if you like that. And like, I think getting kids hooked into the pro game and realizing there is pro volleyball.
Yeah.
Because it blows my mind every time someone's like, oh, why do you coach volleyball? There's no pro. It's like, oh, dude, there's Europe and there's Asia.
Have you heard of Europe before?
And there's Brazil.
Yeah. Like,
there's, you know, there's Puerto Rico. There's the middle, you know, there's so many places you can go play post college. And I mean, is it great money unless you're Man Anderson? No. But at the same time, yeah. I mean, you know, I had friends that went and played over in Europe for 6-7 years. They came back with $80,000 in their pocket, and they've got 6 years of awesome stories, and then they go to their career job.
Right.
So like, you were 20 years old with a college degree in Europe, getting money, you know, getting paid money to play volleyball. Pretty all right in my book.
Sign me up.
I mean, just getting like showing kids. And I realize you're not going to do this with an 8-year-old per se, but I mean, just getting those seeds planted, there is life after high school. There is life after college.
Right.
And I think having that carrot to dangle for the, you know, the kids that really, you know, that are willing to take on challenges, I think you can really expedite growth early for them because, you know, so many of them don't know because they've never been told.
In the spirit of The Last Dance, did you watch it, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I remember that was 98 Bulls the last year. I mean, I was living in Chicago. I remember my family used to record the Bulls games, and I mean, I remember those, I feel like I remember watching this game when I was a kid, and we did, we watched the Bulls games all the time. And one of the things that, that I was thinking about when you were just talking was like, you know, when I was 12 watching the 98 Bulls, I had, you know, if I wanted to play basketball, I had somebody to look up to. I was like, holy crap, it's Jordan. He's on TV. And in volleyball, we don't really have, I don't think we do a good enough job of promoting it in that way. Not at all. And granted, okay, so outside of a professional league in America, but, you know, I don't expect every kid to know who Karch Karai is. It's my first question I ask every club player and tell them they have to give me a book report on him. But, you know, we really need to do a better job of like encouraging them to like watch college, like collegiate matches. And now that
I don't know how many people realize if you go on YouTube, the FIVB has a channel. You can watch entire Olympic matches for free.
Yes. Thank you. Some of them,
and some of them don't have an announcer. Okay, so you don't know the player's name, but like, dude, Google a jersey. You know, like Google the roster. It's not that hard. So, I mean, just understanding, like, there's the best players in the world you can watch for free on YouTube. You're allowed to do it. And I think just giving – I don't think we have enough volleyball geeks out there.
Yes.
And I don't think there's nearly enough geeky content for those geeks to soak up. And I think that's what's that's a barrier of entry for some kids because they want to learn. They want to know about, you know, this player, that player. I want to know their backstory. And like USA Volleyball puts out like a video a year. It's like, oh, neat.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
I don't know. I think that's a completely different podcast topic and we're getting a little away from the lead here, but
let's do it.
But at the end of the day, let's come back to center.
I actually want to say something though.
No, you're not allowed to. Fine, do it on your podcast.
Well, it's about like having those sort of role models and those people to look up to. I remember this girl played for Michigan State, and her name was Jenna Roble. I don't know. I remember watching the games on TV and watch on Big Ten and be like, oh, look at that, a girl from Michigan State. And then I was like, I want to go to Michigan State. Oh, her number is number six. My number is going to be number six. Don't know. Like, I mean, it's not like she played on the Olympic team. I think she tried out and didn't make it. That's who I looked up to. That's who I was like so infatuated with and like loved to watch play. And so that kept me wanting to play, even if I didn't play on my varsity high school team. I was like, that is just so cool. Look how good she is. Totally agree with you.
And I think coaches too, like, if you have a Division I school near you, if you send the coach an email and say, hey, I got 30 kids in this, you know, youth development program, can we get tickets? Half the time they're giving to you for free. Most of the time they're giving to you for free. Or they'll give you, you know, a group rate, you get super cheap tickets, and you'll probably get a meet and greet with the players. Because the college coaches know, like, they get it. Like, they want more kids coming in the building anyway. Because also, if the kids fall in love with a player, they'll probably come to the summer camp anyway.
Yes.
So, I mean, everybody wins. So, at the end of the day, like, just getting them exposed to what a college match looks like. Because once you go to a game, I took my homeschool team, which, I mean, these are high school age kids, but at the same time,
they're all different.
Very green. I mean, like, I had to teach them soup to nuts volleyball when I walked in the door. Mm. And I talked to University of Buffalo. I'm like, hey, I got a team. I'm like, oh, here's free tickets. Like, you're good. Yeah. And just seeing, you know, when we walk into Alumni Arena, I mean, all of my kids were just like, oh, this is so cool. And the cool part was my libero, who didn't really like being a libero, but she was an outside who could hit the ball to save her life. Yeah, called libero in my book. She watched the UB libero light it up, and then suddenly she's like, and she was a basketball player, and she goes, Coach Pat, I think I want to play college volleyball. And she still played a little bit of basketball just because, you know, she loved it, but she was actually the first kid of mine from that team that went to college to play volleyball. She's now
a
Franciscan, some religious school, and I want to say Pennsylvania. So it was pretty cool that we sent a kid to college to play volleyball. Off of a homeschool team. But
that is really impressive.
I think getting the young kids exposed and the thing too, like, a lot of the parents, if they don't come from a volleyball background, they don't get it. They don't know. Mm-hmm. They think they know because that's how everyone acts.
Of course.
And just showing what that really is. I mean, I think that's how you can engage a kid for life. Cause once you see those, you know, the bright lights and the big court and this, you know, these huge players, just like, oh my gosh. It's like, you can be part of this. So how do you, as a coach, how do you find ways to enjoy coaching the lesser age groups, the younger age groups?
Yeah, it's a struggle for sure, because it's a lot of it. You know, you watch collegiate volleyball and you see them run these fun plays and get all these stuffed blocks, and you're like, man, it's so much fun. And then you go to, you know, your little 6-year old who can't serve over the net or anything. It's like, you're just like, oh.
Or who can walk under the net.
I have had that. Yeah, we all had that.
Yeah, I mean, you go from watching girls get their armpits above the net to coaching a kid who can walk under the net. And you're like, oh, these are two very different athletes.
Oh, a little bit, a little bit.
Lowercase A, uppercase A.
I think that in order for you to enjoy it, you have to have the personality that'll allow you to enjoy it. Because if you're going in there expecting like very pretty, awesome, you know, volleyball, you're going to really be disappointed. I try to like look at the process that's, especially with this age group, you can't think about the outcome. You're going to be miserable. So the process part of it. And when I see a kid, you know, throughout a 6-week camp, get better and better, and finally on the last day, get their serve over the net. Or it even gets to the net. Like, it doesn't even go over, it just hits the net because they finally got it, you know, that 30 feet that they needed. That's the way to enjoy it. You have to enjoy the process. You have to look at the little tiny victories that happen every single day. And it's hard, because it's hard in all of the madness and all of the mistakes to see the little victories sometimes, because it's overwhelming how bad it can be. But yeah, I mean, I have so many like awesome stories of kids where they, you know, they finally get it, or they come back to me like, you know, a couple months later and are telling me like, oh, I finally got this serve. Like, thank you so much. That's, you know, that's the process. That's, you know, even if it's not even with me, it's like, I help start them getting involved in that. But yeah, I think that you have to really enjoy the process, really, really enjoy it.
Yeah. And I think too, understanding just where this camp is on the totem pole of life.
Yes.
The best kid that's going to walk into your welcome to volleyball camp is terrible. It relative to all of the other players in the world. After the six weeks they spend with you, or the 4 days or whatever, you know, however the camp is set up, even if you coach at an Olympic level, they're still going to be terrible relative to the rest of the world.
Yep.
There is no pressure. There is no pressure to get any better, because at the end of the day, when mommy and daddy pick them up, what's the first question out of mom and dad's mouth?
Did you have fun? Hopefully.
Did you have fun?
Yeah.
Did you have fun? If they didn't have fun, they're not coming back.
Right.
I mean, whether they don't come back for the next session or they don't come back for the next cycle, you're probably not going to see them again. They're not going to be a repeat customer.
Yeah.
And I hate to make it about dollars and cents, but like, let's face it, we're all here to run a business.
I got courts to pay for.
Yeah. I mean, you want that good press out there. They're going to get better. They're terrible. Just touch the volleyball. They will magically get better as they figure things out.
Yep.
They have to have fun. So as soon as, and it took me a while, because I was sitting there, like, I felt like, oh man, like, we got nationals. Like, you know, because like my club teams would have nationals. And then I'd go over to that side of the gym. And it's like, oh, we got nationals. It's like, yeah, but these kids don't, stupid.
Yeah. Like, right.
This kid's wearing shin pads, not knee pads. Like, I don't even, like, we're not even going to get in. I've had that.
Oh.
Jorts and shin pads, because mom.
I've had like, jorts. Yep.
Jorts with shin pads is a different story, though.
Oh, mom goes,
yeah, we couldn't find knee pads, so we figured shin pads would work. I'm like, no, but okay. Wow. So, I mean, what could the parents possibly expect out of the jort shin pad combo kid? Like, they just wanted to have fun. They just want to have fun. They're not going to be jump topspin serving. They're not hitting bigs. Right. We're not running combos. They just want to have fun. So,
yeah.
And no one's perfect. I mean, I've definitely gotten frustrated. Like, why can't the group get it? And I'm like, but what am I frustrated about?
Yeah.
Like, what match are they preparing for?
Right. I mean,
so it's just letting them, I mean, the goal of our youth development program in Buffalo was to get them prepared to try out for 12s. That's all it was.
Yeah.
So if they were, if I could make a competitive 12s tryout, I think we ran 4 cycles of the ACES program. So if I could get 4 sets of kids trying out for 12s, I did my job.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very easy once I understood my job at an emotional level. Because I understood it rationally, but I think I just understand it emotionally and not be like, oh, and like rage monster coach, because that doesn't make anyone any better.
No.
But then, yeah, I started to have fun with it. And I still have, I think there are 4 girls. I left Buffalo 3 years ago. There are 4 girls on a ones or twos team between the ages of 17 and 13 that I didn't coach.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So, I mean, look at you. You're a big deal. In New York.
Yeah.
Not in Minnesota. Well,
everywhere I've ever been, really. But I mean, that was the thing, though. It was like, once we kind of got in the groove and me and my assistants figured it out, I mean, it became very very quick. There is a brand that we can create here of kids that just want to have fun.
Yeah.
And when they have fun, they come back. It's like, okay, now we can push you, because now there's other kids like you. And that got really organic really quick. And we didn't yell. So, all right, let's wrap this up. If you are just tuning in now, and somehow if you come in 55 minutes into a podcast, I don't know why you'd be listening now. But
yeah, what's weird. The most
important thing? Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird way to listen to a podcast. But what is the most important thing we've talked about, do you think?
Process.
Wrong. Especially the answer is me being important everywhere I've been.
What did you say?
The most important thing was how I'm important everywhere I've ever been.
Oh.
Process will be second most important. Oh, but you can extrapolate on that.
Pat, getting a gold star is most important.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yes, I think the process is that it's like a non-negotiable for me. Even with like the coaches that I hire for my camps and stuff, I tell them like, hey, you got to celebrate every process. You cannot be screaming at them or anything. I don't tolerate that. I always get good coaches anyway, but yeah, I think that's the most important part. Figure out the little victories in the process and cheer them on. And that's how you're going to enjoy it. That's how they're going to enjoy it. And you're going to have lifelong ambassadors of the program of volleyball. Yeah.
Cause I'd much rather have three all-star coaches with lots of energy than six lumps on a log
that lean on the pole and like just hang out.
Ball. Yeah. Yeah. Like six robots doesn't make your program better.
Right.
So don't be afraid to be like, hey man, I don't need you. If that's how you're going to coach, that's fine. I don't need you. And it's an uncomfortable conversation, but at the same time, I would rather hurt an adult's feelings than turn a kid off of volleyball.
Whoa. Yes. Yes. Good job. So, finger snaps for you. Good job.
Guys, that's why I'm number one, but
another gold star.
Closing remarks. What do you got?
My closing thoughts would be, first of all, I would love for those coaches that are, you know, like the YMCA, NYS, you know, helping out at some, you know, being a parent at some random school and you get, unfortunately, the title of having to be a volleyball coach for them. First of all, I wish that they all could get some coaching education. I wish everybody could go through how to communicate with players and make sure that they have a positive experience. And what are ways that you can look at the process and try to, I mean, this should be like your number one, most important on a big billboard in neon letters. How do you emphasize the process with this age group and how do you get them to have fun? That is important. That is important. It's not about, oh, these kids need to be perfect technically so that they can be on my varsity team in a couple of years, or they need to know that this is the correct way to do this because they need to play on the national team in 2 years. Like, it doesn't matter. It does not matter. We're here to get these kids to play. We want them to play. It doesn't matter what level they play. I want them to play until they're 90 years old. And when they're in a nursing home or a retirement home, I want them to keep playing. That's what I think we're all here for as a coach. And so I pleading out to anybody that's listening to this that is not that way to first remember that your job as a coach is to change the lives of these kids and keep them involved in the sport as long as possible. And the only way you're going to do that is by making sure that they're having fun and caring about the process, especially at the younger age. That's my soapbox. I'm getting off now.
Fair enough. Stuck the landing.
Yes.
And for me, I just having been around the sport for as long as I've been, there's a lot of dumb stuff that we do at the younger age groups in practice.
Yeah.
Or, you know, in camp and whatnot. And just when you are writing your practice plan out, ask why. Why are we doing what we're doing?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not sure why you wrote a drill in, maybe don't do that drill.
Yeah.
Because if the kids aren't getting better in some way and what they're doing isn't directly benefiting volleyball in some fashion, stop. Because if it's stupid, they're going to realize it's stupid. Yep. And I've seen some coaches get away with it. And it's like, cool, man, you killed time. But if you're killing time at practice or at camp, I don't think you're there for the right reasons.
Yep.
So just keeping that in the back of your mind too. So that's all I got, man.
All right. Well, thanks again for tuning in for another awesome episode with my awesome beardy co-host. Somewhere in that beard is a good man, Pat Medea. Good job.
Thanks, Sarah.
All right. Signing out.